This episode of Nerd Parents is brought to you today by Chore Monster. Chore Monster is a web and mobile app that makes chores fun for kids. Sign up for your free account at choremonster.com. And by Chocolateness. Their passion for chocolate runs deep. Use the code NERD and get 10% off your order. Head on over to shop.chocolateness.us and explore chocolate heaven. Welcome back, everybody, to Nerd Parents. This is episode 11, and I'm probably going to be clearing my throat through this entire episode because we are sick parents. This is a podcast for parents and people that are not parents that are just interested in hearing about cool, nerdy stuff. We come together every week in a positive space to discuss parenting in a nerdy world. I'm your host, Nicole Spag. With me, as always, is an awesome, awesome group of nerd parents. We're going back to our regulars. We don't have any special guests, but we are officially announcing a regular parent to the panel. You've heard him before. He's been on the show. Mr. Eric. How do you pronounce your last name, Eric?
Mahler.
Mahler.
Sounds like taller.
Well, and you do Snyder, or I was getting confused.
Snyder Mahler is a stupid nickname that I chose way back when, that now it's so like used up everywhere that I can't get rid of it, and I wish I would have changed it long ago.
And I was thinking that I'm like, no, I know his last name is Mahler, but
and Snyder was just a dumb nickname that I had in high school from. It's a dumb story, but yeah.
But you want to tell the listening audience, because we have some new listeners, about your family?
Yeah, sure. So my name's Eric. I live in Salt Lake. I with my wife Christine, we have a daughter named Colette, who is 7, and a son named Thaddeus, who is 10 months old now.
Oh, Thaddeus! I love the name Thaddeus.
Me too.
And you also do a podcast, a daily podcast.
I do.
Mr. Mom Daily.
That's right.
And it's just called, you kind of lamenting.
It's just me rambling into the microphone for about 5 minutes every weekday. It's usually got something to do with parenting or my family, but sometimes it's just me talking because it's the show about me. I'm Mr. Yeah. Mom.
Well, it's kind of like a diary of sorts.
Yeah.
I enjoy it. And then we are also welcoming back Carrie. Hey, Carrie.
Hi, guys. What's going on?
Hi. What's going on with you?
Not much. For those of you who don't know me, my screen name in the Frog Pants chat room is Cleo, and my name is Carrie, and I have 3 children. Sarah is 14, Eden is 11, and Colin is 4.
Yeah. And for me, I have a son named Mateo who's 2 years old, so... We like to come together every week and talk about what's going on in our world. We talk about some ups and downs. We have some fun segments. Later on, we have our toddler translations, and I'll be putting our parents to the test.
Uh-oh. I can't wait to do very
this.
Poorly.
So we've actually got some submissions, which I'm really happy about, because I can only get Mateo to say so many words until we're like, okay, let's hear some other kids. And we have our family game night that we talk about. In fact, I forgot to put mine in. I'll figure something out. I always have something for you. And then, of course, our solicit advice, where you, the listeners, write in, and for whatever reason, you want our thoughts on a particular topic, which, again, I'm totally out of it, because I have been really, really sick pretty much for the entire month of February and into March. And I just want to say March and February blow. I hate them. I hate those months, because I always seem to get sick every time. It must be the weather.
You're not the only one.
Have you been sick
everyone,
too?
Yeah. Well, the whole household here has been sick, and I've heard a lot of people online that I know too. Just everyone is sick. It seems we've all got something. Yeah.
Well, and then our other regular parent, Samantha Jane, she was going to be here, but she's sick. So, Samantha, we love you. I hope you feel better. She says she's just sitting there drinking tea and kind of relaxing. So, but yeah, stomach flus and cold and flus and just bleh. And then, of course, you know, Cleo over there with her broken foot.
Yep. I knew the dance moves would get me eventually. Darn it. I'm not sick. I just break all the things. My mom wanted to nickname me Grace as a child because I just don't have any, apparently. Yeah, I've been trying really hard, guys, to come up with an awesome story to put on the Tadpool Facebook page about how I did something, you know, saved a cat. There was a burning home. Something that would be, yes, with single-handedly no weapons. Something ninja-related would be good, but I'm not coming up with anything. The fact of the matter is my son left a blanket on the floor. I tripped over it, and instead of falling on him, I tried to flip myself over the couch like a dead fish and broke my foot. So, yeah.
Gosh, it's just rough.
I'm doing the show from the couch myself, but for very different reasons because I can't be vertical at the moment. That's my issue.
Well, I saw you. I think you said something in the chat room. You're like, I can't sit still. Ah, this is killing me.
Oh God, I am so not the person to say, okay, now just sit down and relax and put your foot up. Sure, yeah. 43-year-old woman with ADHD and a caffeine problem. Yeah, I'm gonna sit. Absolutely. Yep, you bet. So I have taken out the big, ugly boot with all the Velcro and the square-toed, weird-looking shovel foot shoe thing that I have on, and I have been trying to shuffle around the house and do things, but because it's my big toe and the top of my foot, you don't realize how much you use that stuff until you can't – it's immobilized, and then you're like, oh! So I've been clomping around the house trying to get things accomplished, and my kids are just like, wow, that's just – no, go sit down.
I mean, so this – did either of you break bones as children?
Oh, God, all of them. Yeah.
Really? I didn't break. Oh, God. I always had a fear of it, but I never broke a bone. I've never broken a bone.
I did once. I broke my my left foot and my left wrist at the same time because I jumped off a balcony because I'm an idiot.
Is it? You know what? It is. It's that way. It's you think that when you're small, you're like, I'm lightweight. I will fly. That's what it is. That's exactly what I did.
The dumbest part of that is that I thought I was going to impress a girl doing that, I was just dumb.
Yeah, I've sprained my ankle like more than I can count. I can count a lot, so it's not that much. But yeah, I've never broken. I've come really close, but I've never broken my my ankle. That would have been what I would have broken, but.
My grandmother used to run a school out of her home, kindergarten and preschool. Mm-hmm. And my brother and I would be there. You know, my mom was a teacher, so we would be there all the time. And I remember standing on the table, the playroom table, which is the first no-no, shouldn't be on that.
Right.
And my brother, who was a year older than me, had lining up some matchbox cars on the floor and saying, see if you can jump over this. I thought I could fly. You know, why not? And I jumped and my feet landed on the trucks and they went out from underneath me and my elbow went into the concrete floor.
Oh, no.
So I shattered the process on my left elbow and the piece is locked up in my shoulder. That's how hard I hit. So to this day, I still don't have 100%. I can't touch my shoulder with my left hand. Like if you take your right hand, you can touch your shoulder. I can't touch my left shoulder at all.
Oh, my goodness.
Another physical problem of mine. I break all the things. I break all the things, and
it's pretty bad. I have a big fear. I'm really surprised I never did. I hope I never do.
You're not missing anything.
No. Well, but as a kid, when somebody does break their arm or their foot, they all get to sign it, and they make deal about it.
That was great. Yeah. And then you get big cards. I remember getting big cards in the hospital. I had to have surgery to have it all replaced. And I had a fake elbow process. I had to have all the pieces. It was fantastic. And then I got to bring in the big metal pins that held my elbow in place. That was show and tell for like 2 weeks straight. Ooh. These were in your arm. Yes, ma'am. I'm bionic. Check me out. That was great.
And then it's all stinky.
Yes. Oh, God. And then you take the cast off, and not only does it stink, but your arm is about half the size of the other one, so you look like a dinosaur on one side.
Right. And it looks like Robin Williams' arm or something. It's all
yes. It's all hairy and pale. Oh. Smells like Doritos. It was horrible.
So in the show, we like to kind of talk about our ups and downs, which we've kind of been doing that already. I know, Erica, thank you. We have the same down, just being sick. Sick. And I just, again, February, March, suck it. I'm seriously thinking next year, because this happened to me last year too. February is when I got walking pneumonia and a horrible sinus infection that didn't go away for like weeks. And so this one was two two stomach flus and a 2 week cold that just doesn't want to go away either. So I'm seriously thinking about taking Mateo out of daycare all of February and March of next year because of this.
Seriously.
Right.
Just pass it around all day long.
Just try to avoid, you know, it. I'm kind of over it. So do you have, Eric, do you have an up?
Yeah. Sorry. I my 10-month-old son, Thaddeus, who by all accounts, usually by 10 months, you know, the kids aren't quite walking
right,
yet.
Right.
He's totally walking.
At 10 months?
He's walking around.
That's awesome.
He can get from, you know, one end of the room to the other and turn around and start on his way back. And then usually he'll plop down because he's good at crawling. He's like, screw this, I'll just crawl.
Right.
But he can walk. He's walking all over the place.
Oh, that is so awesome.
It's nuts. I'm exhausted because I'm chasing him. But it's exciting. I'm, you know, it's just so, it's so crazy.
I don't know if I should say this, but it is a little personal. My up is Mateo finally is going in the potty, both one and two.
Yay! That's awesome. No, that's a huge one.
Yeah, but the problem is he doesn't tell anyone. And he just says, poot, poot, poot. And I'm like, and he's figured out if he says poot when it's nap time, I will take him to the bathroom. So now he's becoming little Mr. Manipulative, and I'm like, buddy, it's nap time. He'll grab his diaper and go poot. I'm like, do you have to poop? And I'm like, I can't not take him to the bathroom if he's telling me, because I'm trying to encourage him to tell me. We're not there yet consistently, so we're still kind of working through all the really messy, ugly details of potty training. But yeah,
sure.
I think that's my up. Yeah, that's totally my up.
Yay.
Cause
that's awesome.
I don't like messing with poot.
No one
blame
does.
You.
It was. Here's the funny thing. St. Patrick's Day at school, they do everything green. So Tuesday morning, Mark comes up to me and says, I think there's something wrong with his poop. And I'm like, what? It's green. I'm like, he's like, I don't know what's going on. It looks like green frosting. And I go, oh, they had food coloring and everything yesterday. I bet you that's what it was. I'm not kidding you. It looked like frosting to the point where I had to smell it to make sure it was poot.
Like nuclear glowing green.
It was like, yes, it was crazy. I'm like, yeah, thank you, St. Patrick's Day.
Oh my gosh.
So, Eric, I just saw in your notes, Colette went to the dentist. How did that turn out?
Well, that was part of my down because, she had needed some cavities filled. She'd gone already once to do one part of it. There was going to be three different appointments. So she did her first and she did so well. She was brave and she didn't seem like it was like a traumatic experience. She got through it just fine. And so the dentist and I were like, okay, we'll just do this again. We'll get it all finished up. No problem. And we did that yesterday and it was just so terrible.
Mm.
She was crying and she was tensed up and I don't know what changed, but
something.
For whatever reason, it was not good. So, but she got through it and she's fine, of course, but it was just really bad. So next time she's got one more coming left and they're going to kind of sedate her a little. They're going to give her something to drink. And I don't know exactly what that means, but
just to calm her down.
Yeah, like a mild sedation. Yeah. So next time it should be fine. But that was just hard to see Colette just in the chair and I couldn't do anything and she was struggling.
Yeah, it's funny. Dentists, my mother-in-law, she has a big fear of dentists. Like she will only go to the ones that will sedate her.
Mm.
And it can be traumatic. We have a lot of books for Mateo. So that revolve around the dentist, so he's more aware. So when we took him to this kids-only dentist, and he did surprisingly well.
See, that's the thing, is Colette's dentist is a kids-only dentist, and she, you know, I can't blame my the dentist or anything, because she was actually wonderful about the whole thing. All yesterday when Colette was struggling, her and the assistant both went – way and beyond mm-hmm. what, you know, you'd think you'd need to try and make her more comfortable and to help her deal with it. So they were really wonderful about it. It was just one of those things.
Do they put the kids all in the same room in your dentist? Because that's what they do, kind of like the herd mentality in the dentist we go to. So all of the kids are in the same room together. So it's really? Like, so they said, because we find that they don't want the other kids to think they're not brave, or like they almost regulate one another.
Well, I hadn't thought about that. Yeah. That's interesting.
So, and because at first we were like, oh, we want a private room. Like, no, you don't want a private room. We do it because we find that putting them all in the same room, they're more relaxed, and because they know other kids are watching them. Mm. So they want to.
I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. So.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, hopefully her next visit will be better.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Carrie, how about you? Ups and downs?
Yeah, I wouldn't, you know, surprisingly enough, I wouldn't say that my down has anything to do with the broken foot, because I'm so used to breaking all the things that it's just kind of like, you know, oh, Monday. Oh, okay. For me, I would say my up and down is kind of combined this week. My youngest child, who is my last child, has got his preschool screening coming up. And I'm very excited for him to go. He's very, very ready for school. Colin tends to do a lot of stuff with technology. Right. He likes to take the phone. He has his own mm-hmm. tablet. And he loves to watch YouTube videos about his ABCs. And he loves to spell. And he can read. So I'm thinking he's gonna smoke through the preschool screening. I'm all proud of myself. And I said to him the other day, okay, let's do your ABCs for Sarah, his older sister. And he started saying them, and immediately they didn't sound right. And I know the kid knows his ABCs because he reads. Right. So I said, wait a minute, what is that? And he started doing it again. Immediately, it didn't sound right. And I said, wait a second. And I said, show me what you're doing. He's doing them in Russian. I have no idea where the kid learned Russian. Yeah. Apparently, and I wish I had it in front of me, there are some YouTube videos where they do their ABCs, but they do them in all different languages, but with the same tune.
Right, right.
So he knows that as his ABCs, because it shows, you know, most of the letters are similar. The Cyrillic alphabet is different in some ways. But he starts doing blah, blah, blah. I can't even sing it for you. I don't even know what they are.
And then
he started writing his ABCs, and he can do capital and lowercase letters. And I said, oh, that's great. And then he says, how you do the Russian one? And I said, I don't know. And he was all disappointed with me. Oh. I was like, come on, dude. I'm 43. I don't know this crap.
But wow. He knows, yeah.
So my biggest concern is not so much that he's doing it in Russian, because I know he knows his English. It's that I don't want him to get into the screening and launch into Russian and have people think he isn't capable of doing it in English.
Well, you should probably just prepare them and say, yeah, he might do it in Russian.
Yeah. I was hoping that I could kind of go in there with, like, you know, the warning flag up that he's mm-hmm. been doing a lot of videos and he likes to do this and he does know English, but he does know the other alphabet. But he seems very, very focused on Russian right now, which is fine with me. I mean, I would be surprised he didn't learn Chinese. That's half of his heritage. But right. He just seems to have fallen in love with Russian. I just don't want it to compromise. You know, when they say, what are his shapes? He's starting to say those in Russian. And I'm like, no, it's a circle, damn it. So, come on.
That's cool, though.
That's so awesome.
That's really funny.
I'm impressed.
It's pretty cool. I mean, he does his ABCs, and while he's doing them, he uses his fingers to make the shape. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, and I thought this was an opportunity for learning. So I said, you know, sometimes there are children who can't speak with their mouth, kind of like Eden, his sister. And I said, some of those kids use sign language. And he goes, American Sign Language. I see that on the YouTube. And he starts I'm going,
that's so
what? You know? So as much as I'm excited, I'm just a little bit like, oh, am I going to have like a conversation with somebody who's concerned about his development?
He's a sponge right now.
Wow.
He is. Yeah. And that's what I love about it. That's the up, is that he is just sucking in all this stuff.
So cool.
And he loves it. So that's been very cool. And my nerves are a little on edge because I don't want him to go
in there.
It'll
be fine. Yeah. It'll be fine. It's funny that you brought up sign language, because one of Mateo's favorite videos right now is a baby Einstein, and it has a kitten on the front. And for a while, he was just going around going, kitten, kitten. I'm like, what do you want? He wanted the video that has the kitten on it.
Well,
and it's objects around the house. And in the video, they have multiple times where they'll do the sign for table and they'll do the sign for chair. And he's sitting there and he's going, like, with his hands, and I'm like, buddy, he's signing table. And now when you ask him, hey, buddy, what's the sign for table? He'll do table.
He'll show you.
He'll do chair. I'm like, okay, well, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
I feel kind of bad.
Yeah, really it's really kind of fun to watch him just pick up all this stuff.
In. Yeah, right.
And it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with something he's interested in. It's just I said, show me the letter. I don't know what it was. I'm going to say C. Cyrillic alphabet, the R's. It looks like an R done backwards. Right. One of the letters in Cyrillic alphabet.
Right.
And I said to him, I said, oh, and I thought he was doing a regular R. And I said, no, honey, it goes this way. And he goes, this is the Russian one, Mom. Oh.
Yeah, Mom. Das Vedanya.
Sorry.
So,
exactly.
So since we're talking about kind of educational programming and tablets and things like that, a few weeks ago, I came across an article on the Huffington Post from a pediatric occupational therapist. She's a speaker. And she says the 10 reasons why handheld devices should be banned from children under the age of 12. Yeah. And she goes through these 12 reasons. And by the end of it, I'm livid. I'm furious at the, you know, just fear that this woman is putting out there. And these studies that she keeps referencing are from 2007. Guess what? 2007, we didn't even have the iPhone. We didn't even have the iPad. We didn't have this kind of studies with technology that we do today. So if you're going to tell people they shouldn't be putting these devices in children's, how about you get some current research? Because just shortly thereafter, NPR and on the Today Show Moms, a doctor who devised screen time limits says iPads may be okay for babies. Because now they're doing new research on the actual things that exist for children right now and things that we've been talking about here. And I clearly see a change in Mateo. I mean, he was born premature. So the NICU nurse was just kind of hammering in us that he's going to have developmental delays. And he may. I mean, those may not have surfaced. But with just the interaction that we've been able to do with the types of apps like Endless Reader, Endless Alphabet, the Elmo ABCs, these apps are not passive; they are interactive, and they're books too. So, I like the fact that they are kind of revising. The guy that actually he co-authored the American Academic of Pediatrics 2011 guidelines. That said, no media under 12 or under 2. He's actually saying, no, I think these may be fine. So I think they're probably still doing a little bit of the studying. So it says, I can't pronounce his last name. He's a Seattle pediatrician who studies the effect of media on children. Now says that kids younger than 2 may actually benefit from 30 to 60 minutes a day of screen time as long as it's interactive and not passive. And that's what these apps that we talk about are very, very interactive. And a lot of times, especially when Mateo was like 12 months, 18 months, it would be me showing him, like I would drag the letters. And then you just see like the little neurons firing goes, oh, I get it. And then next thing I know, a week later, he's doing it by himself. So the apps themselves for Mateo, I can't say enough, have helped him be at the place that he is now, which he knows his full alphabet. He knows his numbers up to 20. I mean, they've just really been helpful. But again, we talk about context, content, and the child, reading your child and making sure that they're responding appropriately to this, because it may not be for everyone. And we can't do blanket statements like this. So I'm curious what your thoughts are on these two articles, guys.
Well, I imagine, excuse me, I imagine that anytime there's something new for kids to interact with, like iPads or when TV came out, that there'd be people writing articles to vilify it.
Right.
I'm sure when kids started watching TV every Sunday morning, that a lot of people wrote newspaper articles about, oh no, the downfall of our children, they're all going to be dumb now.
Yeah.
Or something like that. And it just, I mean, it all comes down to just how the parent facilitates the new technology with the kid. You know,
being involved, being a parent, and being involved, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you're gonna leave the kid alone with an iPad for a couple hours, then sure, you're not doing much good. But if you know, if what like you're doing, you know, you're interacting with Mateo, you're playing with him, and he's clearly learning things, and now wants to do it on his own. I mean, there's nothing but good happening there. It's I don't know. I'm with you. I'm just agree with what pretty much all you just said there.
When I see these articles on Huffington Post, I hate how it vilifies and broadly puts technology into this bad place. I think I can't remember, it was an article or something I read, something about how when we started putting written word on paper, people were against that because they thought it would make our minds weaker. Because, I mean,
we don't have to remember anything. We can just put it down.
We just write it down, right?
Lazy brain.
So you get these kinds of, when you have these jumps in kind of progress in technology, whether it be paper, you know, news. So you have paper, newspaper, radio, television, internet. And you have these jumps.
The other thing is you got to think that, you know, the kids, they're growing. This is the world they're growing up in.
This is their world.
Yeah, they're going to have to learn how to interact with all of this stuff. So they're going to have a slight edge over people who weren't allowed to use technology when they were young. When they're in high school and college and they're having to use computers and God knows what to do all their schoolwork, they'll already know how to get into it and do stuff. Where they won't have to learn how to use the technology to do their schoolwork.
Right.
Or just something like that.
Yeah, so you know? I was really glad to see an article, two articles. In fact, I put them in the show notes. There's one from NPR and one from the Today Show, Today Moms, NBC News, that kind of go against the 10 reasons. And I read the comments on this Huffington Post one, and I just want, like, she would never address people, like, challenging her. She would just cite the study. And I was just like, ugh.
Yeah, that's frustrating. I'm frustrated about it. Well, let me put it to you this way. There are two ways you can take it. You can look at Huffington Post and say, not exactly the fountain of intellectual knowledge property anyway. But by the same token, there are enough people that are going to Huffington Post that are looking at that, that it's stimulating a conversation, and that's important too. Mm-hmm. So you can take that away from it. What bothers me is that this article was written by somebody who's an occupational therapist who's involved with children. Yeah. If her limit to her occupational therapy is thinking that children are only using their small motor development in their hands to learn, that's a her problem because that's not how kids operate. That's if anything true. Else, this particular type of technology fosters independence in children that was not possible before, because they were not given the opportunity to learn things at their own pace.
Right.
They were given a curriculum that they had to follow in order to get to point A to point B. And now that they have this opportunity to explore and take interest in things very much from a homeschooling perspective, not that I've done it, but I have a lot of friends that do it, but they take the child's interest and amplify them in ways that can be applied like to an educational curriculum. Like, this is what I'm really into. Well, let's take that and let's you're really into using your hands. Great. You're really into using numbers and machines. Great. You can still learn the same stuff, just apply it in different ways. It's just a new methodology.
Yeah.
For Eden in particular, she uses an iPad, I would say 60% of every day at school, because children like her, and I'm not saying, you know, Eden being a special needs kid, it doesn't necessarily mean that all kids work that way.
Right.
Again, people, all your children are different.
Yeah.
So are ours.
Yeah.
But a lot of kids that she goes to school with have special needs and they have communication issues. And this is a way that they have found it replicates itself consistently every time. It's assuring for them that it's going to be the same way, the same sound, the same volume every time that they do it. And it encourages them to kind of, if they can, to kind of come out of their shell and explore their own world a little bit.
Yeah.
And I can see absolutely nothing wrong with that. And it is absolutely administered by occupational therapists and vision training specialists from across the country.
And
so
that's awesome. I don't know if you knew this, Carrie. I used to work at a special needs school.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, like years and years ago. But I happened to get a job at the pool at the special needs school. So I was swimming with the kids every day and I got to learn a lot. And I loved working with those kids. And And just to hear about how that, we didn't have iPads or anything back then, but that would have been awesome to try and use.
Yeah.
It's something new like that.
Yeah. Eden is, my daughter's 12, but neurologically she's about 6 months old. Her receptive language, meaning the way she hears and takes in information, is much more developed than her expressive language, because her expressive language is limited by her sensory issues, and that limits her motor development. So they use the iPad that they use. It's used the same iPad for each child. They have their own. They use them in school. It's the same. Once they learn an app, they don't change. They'll change the apps, but they'll add them on, meaning that they'll always have the core set of apps that they learn to begin with, because that's what they learn to trust.
Sure.
But she uses it every day, and it has increased not only her vision, because the muscles in Eden's eyes that are managed with cerebral palsy need to be stretched and moved. And when you choose an app where a ball or a letter or a word slowly migrates across a page, a child can follow that. Someone like Eden can't turn a page in a book. Even though it's a static image, she can't turn the page in the book, so she'll never kind of get that feedback of that consequence of changing the page and finding something new to look at. But this is consistent for her, and it's consistent for the kids that they work with. The only thing that they find to be limiting is that some of those kids have a vision limiting issue where their eyes can only see so far. But because of medical interventions, they can only keep the iPod as, like, Eden's can only be six, has to be a minimum of 6 inches from her body because of the neurological implant she has in her chest, because it'll turn it off if it's too close.
Interesting.
So those are some of the things.
A magnet or something?
Yeah, she has a vagal nerve stimulator.
Yeah.
So in this, the technology inside of an iPod will turn off her vagal nerve stimulator.
Right.
So they have to keep it at least 6 inches from her. But what's great is they can take the same apps that she's used and blow them up so that they're bigger on the screen. So even if it's far away, she still can use the same technology.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this stuff is amazing. I will give it to HuffPo, and I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt, and I normally don't, in saying that at least they're stimulating conversation around the country in people who may have never even considered it, the reason that these things are necessary for the good or the positive or negative in both situations.
I just feel that when there's something new that, you know, we're the old ones and this is how we've always done it, that this article is almost, I think it's dangerous, because it validates the people that don't feel like they feel that that's not good. Like,
oh, all the damn feels get in the way of the smart. Embrace the science, people. Come on.
Exactly.
I can't wait to find out what I'm going to be afraid of when I'm 72.
But where this article, I just said this is total crap, was when they brought up Grand Theft Auto 4 or 5. I'm like, what 12-year-old? I mean, I guess there probably are 12-year-olds, but I'm sorry, you know, a 6-year-old is not playing Grand Theft Auto 5.
And if they are, then the parents.
In an educational setting either. So,
Yeah, it's like, how about you update your study to today and look at what this other pediatrician is talking about, which is the interactive apps. And, you know, everything is going to be screens. It's like to just blanket say no screens. It's like, what are you talking about? That is the world we're living in.
There's a new technology at Disney World. I don't know whether it's at Disneyland or Disney World right now. I just saw it on the news this morning because I watch the news and I'm on the cutting edge like that. They have a new, it looks like a Fitbit band that you're going to wear around your wrist. And that's going to help you get into places. It's going to help you buy things, and you have to put in a passcode. And I'm like, this is all the tech. And this is for kids, and it's for adults, and it's like, this is the stuff they're going to have to interact with. Why are you so afraid of stepping away from what you know and doing something a little bit different? That's frustrating.
Would also keep track of the kids, like if they get lost?
I think it tracks them too, right?
I believe so. Yeah. I believe you have to scan to get in the gate, and you have to scan to get out.
And it will track your – and see, this is – I mean, the, you know, conspiracy, it's like they're going to market your path throughout the – you know, so they can find where they have bottlenecks and maybe too long of lines, or maybe this area, maybe they don't have the right signage up. So they're going to be using this technology to kind of monitor how people experience the park and make changes based on those traffic patterns and things like that.
And there will be somebody who thinks it's conspiratorial. Yeah, they're trying to follow me. No, they're trying to improve your experience. Right. Isn't that kind of what you want? You know?
Yeah. So yeah, that article got me fired up, and I felt we needed to talk about it. And in fact, I guess while we're at it, I don't know if you had a chance to, either of you, listen to last week's episode where we had Chris from Chore Monster on.
I did.
We had someone write in kind of asking about homework and technology after school. And I just wanted to kind of clarify because Nestle Crunchberry on the Facebook page, she chimed in on that, because what that came down to was I had never really thought, I just assumed that schools have the technology, but it makes sense that some schools don't, and not just the schools, but the parents don't. So when you have this kind of barrier to entry, not every kid has an iPad, not every kid has a computer. Yeah. And so to require that can be a slippery slope, I think. And I think that's what the conversation that Chris and Samantha and I were having, where I was like, wow, I hadn't really thought about that, all the homework being required on a computer or things like that, and the kids that don't have the ability to get on a computer, and what can we do to help those lower income families? Because you want to make the playing field equal for all kids. How do you get there in those cases? She wrote in on the Facebook page and was hopefully she was wanting to kind of clarify that, you know, technology is everywhere and we have to put these kids in the real world. Kind of what we were talking about with the screen time and things like that. And I wanted to mention a website that I found. I found a few websites just from the U.S. perspective. I'm sure depending on the country that you live in, there's probably some organizations. But there are a number of organizations throughout the U.S. that if you don't have a computer and you qualify, there's computersforclassrooms.org. There's the CRC Computer Recycling, which they refurbish computers and give them out to lower income families, which is CRC.org, PCsForPeople.com. There's a ton of these organizations. I'm going to put a link in the show notes. So if you know of anyone that needs a computer or a kid that needs a computer in order to do their homework, because unfortunately, that's the world we're living in where they need this tech to do their homework. So these are the kinds of programs that are out there. Free Cycle. Wow, there's a lot of them out there. So I didn't know if either of you had thoughts on this, especially for you, Eric. And for you, Cleo, because you have kids in the homework age range now.
I'm just glad that there's those programs to help kids get computers and stuff, because, you know, they're going to, it's true. I'm really glad that those who have a hard time getting the technology have some way of at least getting help to get one.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and I think a lot of people don't know that they exist. Like,
sure. Well, I didn't.
Yeah.
I,
if you're a teacher, make sure you share that information, especially if you know they don't have a computer or anything like that. There are programs out there to get that. So
I can give you a little information on how it works here. I understand that Belton, Missouri is not exactly the focus of National Technology Review, but we do a pretty good system here. My oldest child is in high school. She's in eighth grade. She starts high school in the fall. They use iPads. All the kids have them. And there are going to be kids who can't get them. And what they do decide to do for the kids this year, Sarah had an iPad last year. My husband and I looked at the opportunity of her having one again. You get it through the school this year, and the high school kids all have laptops.
Hmm.
And what we decided this year was that I felt that she was using the iPad last year for texting, downloading music, and putting pictures of One Direction on it. I didn't feel she was using it appropriately. You know, like it wasn't being used as an educational tool as much as it should have been. So what I decided to do was this year, as I said, no, you can't have one. And she went, what? And I said, no, you can't have one. So what she ended up doing is she went in. I explained to the technology department, as much as I want her to have this, my concern is that if my kid, who is incredibly responsible, is not using it appropriately. Right. I can imagine she's not the only one.
Right.
So I said, here's what I want to know is I want to know, how does she do this? How does she do her homework? How does she connect with her teachers in the off hours? How does she connect with other students if she doesn't have this tech? What's available to her? And they said what they do is that kids like Sarah will get to – they have still have an iPad assigned to them. They just use it while they're in the classroom.
Mm.
And then at the end of the day, they turn it into the office. And they pick it up, and the next morning when they go in, they stop at the office, they pick up their iPad, and they just keep it at the school, and they use it only while they're in the school. So I said, well, what do you do if she comes home and she's got something to do? Every assignment that is prepared for those kids, no matter what the class level is or what the technology is, every assignment has to be able to be turned in on paper. So they don't – there are going to be kids who are – parents are just going to say, for whatever reason, fear of the tech, not wanting the child to get attached. They say to them, everything can be done on paper. Everything can be handed in.
Yeah.
They also gave two parents, if you want to become part of it, something called the Canvas program, which means you – I and of course, I use the tech aspect of it. But I can log in. I can see what all of her assignments are, when they're due, what grade she got on them, what's coming up in the schedule. So – I think it keeps the parents accountable to their children for the tech that they're using and using it appropriately. So I will know if she's not getting her homework done, and I can help, you know, steer that boat if I need to. But I think it gives all the kids that don't have that capability to use the iPad, or the kids that break them and they're not going to replace them, or any of that stuff. They do have fees associated with it. I think it was $50 a year, which when you think about it is nothing. I mean, to spend $15 to fix a cracked screen on an iPhone, I'm sure that some of these parents, $50 is still $50.
Yeah.
And if you're playing, you know, it's food in your mouth before it's going to be an iPad for the kid. That's for sure.
Right.
I think that it's just for her, at least at this level, it is all anything that can be done on tech, which is what they want to push. Mm-hmm. And that's what they want to do at the high school. The everything world. Can be done on paper as well. So I think there are ways around it. And like I said, I don't believe that every school is set up like our system is, but I think that they are very aware that not everybody has access to the tech. And even if you hand it to them and say, here, for $50 a year, you can use this, they're not all going to embrace it.
Right.
So they have to take that. And some people just know their kids well enough to know and say, he's not going to use it the way you want him to, and I don't want to pay for it.
Right.
So and it, then they just say, paper.
And it is a relatively new way of learning. I mean, it is amazing that the iPad only came out, 4 years ago?
Really? Mm-hmm. Is that all?
Yeah.
Wow.
And so I used to work in the higher ed sector, and even in higher ed, it is changing. It's changing things. I mean, it's changing things fast. And so especially if you're the type of person that likes to assess the situation and kind of make your decision. Like I know people that will not, they won't make a hasty decision on anything. It takes them weeks to feel the situation. Like they like to marinate in it. So if you're that type of person, this kind of fast technology is, oh my gosh, it's so scary, right?
It's hard.
And we're in that weird middle place where the kids are like, oh my God, this is awesome. And, you know, a group of the older is like, oh, this is too fast, and I haven't had a chance to really understand it or mull it over. It's happening, you know, everything's changing, da, 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 da. And it's and you're seeing this kind of divide happening, which is it's not that surprising, to be honest.
I think it's one thing if you're a parent who can support your children in this adventurous learning system and go and learn and go foster brilliance amongst yourselves. That's great. But there are some parents who are afraid of it and are going to be like, I'm afraid that I can't keep up with you, and that way I can't support you in the way you need to be supported. Right. So you're going to come to me in 2 weeks and say, hey, I've been learning and I've done X, Y, and Z, and how can you help? And you're going to go, I don't know.
Right.
And that's going to be scary for their children. So they figure, let's just not get involved in that.
Right.
And hold back. And that's a fear thing. And how do you navigate that? I think that's difficult.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like I have no simple answer to any. Like, it seems like more than anything that there is definitely not one answer to the problem. Like, all kinds of things that have to different solutions for all different situations, it sounds like.
Yeah. Well, let's move on. Let's do something fun. Let's do some toddler translations. You guys ready for this?
Yay!
All right. So Barry sent us in a email, and he says, hey, guys, I hope these will help you with you on your show. I sat down with my 2-year-old girl, Lacey, and asked her to say some cute things. So he told me what all of everything that she says. So I'm going to quiz the both of you and listeners, you as well, in the chat room. So I'm going to play. He sent a lot, so we'll come back to Lacey in another future episode. So Barry, thank you for that. So are you guys ready? We're going to translate what Lacey's saying.
Ready.
Go.
I can't wait. All right. So let's do this one first. Hopefully my levels are good. Turn that up a little bit. All right. And I'll play it. I'll play it, and then I can give you a clue if you're not sure, and then I'll play it again. All right. So here's the first one.
Pikachu.
You guys hear?
Is that Pikachu?
Yeah, that is Pikachu. Ha-ha!
Yeah. Come on, Lacey. Love
yeah.
Oh, it's so cute.
Pikachu.
Oh. All right. So here's the next one. She says two words in that one.
Magic.
I think the first word is magic would be my guess, but I'm probably wrong.
I'm with you there on that, but I don't know what the
magic.
Carpet?
Monster's coming.
Oh.
Magic.
Yeah, now I hear it.
All
right, here's the next one. This is a one word.
Treasure.
I'll just tell you. Dinosaur.
Oh.
Dinosaur.
Oh, it is.
So cute. I love it.
Sing songy. I love it.
And then here's your final one. This is three words. And then I might have to turn down just a little because I think she's screaming. She's screaming it because she's very excited.
She's yelling, "I want coffee."
Close. Very close. What do kids usually want?
Candy?
Yes.
I want candy.
Me
too.
Oh, Lacey, you're adorable. Barry, thanks again for sending those in.
So cute.
If you would like to hear your toddler, and maybe they're grown and you captured some audio when they were smaller, I think Kishelle did that with Ben, and she said she was going to send some in. You can send those directly to me at nerdparents@gmail.com. So I really enjoy listening to little kids say words. It's the cutest thing ever. So there we go. Let's see. Let me go back to our show notes here. All right, let's get into some family game night. Yeah. Bon, chicken, bon, bon.
That's a good bumper.
So one of the things that we're having some issues with Mateo on is pickiness with food. And I'm trying to do different things to get him to explore. And I found that this little app that I have to recommend has been helping me with that because they make it fun. And it's Yo Gabba Gabba. Party in my tummy.
That's a good one.
This little app is adorable. So it has the whole Yo Gabba Gabba crew. And what each one of them, you go into their and you'll build a sandwich. And you're like, turkey, yeah. Cheese, yeah. So Mateo's like building the sandwich or he's making the pizza. And then you feed the item to the character. And so he's exploring all these different, you know, spaghetti. Yeah. And it's just really cute and it's fun. And I'm a fan of Yo Gabba Gabba. I know some people aren't, but I love Yo Gabba Gabba.
I like it. DJ Lance is awesome.
Yes, he is. So that's my recommendation, especially if you have a picky eater on your hands. Check out the Yo Gabba Gabba Party in My Tummy app. It might even encourage them. They put together the meal, and you could maybe say, "Hey, do you remember putting that together? We're gonna have that tonight. You want to try it?" And they're always about try it, you'll like it. They have a whole song called "Try It, You'll Like It." So,
oh, I know that song.
Mateo even says, "Try it, try it." So sorry, I'm coughing again. So that's one of my recommendations for apps. I also picked up, and I did put it in the show notes, we had the Valentine's on a few weeks ago, and JJ recommended a game called, I think it was Dice Capades, and it's like 130 some odd dice in it. And you can play two players. So I'm always looking for games that Mark and I can play just us, because Unfortunately, board games aren't Mateo's strong suit right now. This Dice Capades game is really just a lot of fun and goofy. And I'm so thankful that JJ recommended, because I had never heard of it before. So it's kind of like Cranium, where you have like different activities and you have trivia and you have like physical challenges and things like that. But it's with dice.
That sounds fun. So I like Cranium.
Yeah. So Dice Capades, check it out. It's out there. Eric, do you have any gaming recommendations?
Well, as far as what Colette's been playing, not a lot new. She has been playing this one little game on PBSKids.org.
Oh, yeah. Have you, I love
you that. You know the, what is the show? It's a Design Squad. Have you seen that one at all?
No, I haven't.
It's her new obsession. It's all about, it's these group of kids, and they all kind of want to be engineers and designers, and they want to make all these inventions. And it's actually really great. She's learning a lot. And she's constantly wanting to make these cool little creations. Like she learned how to make a amplifier for my iPhone.
Oh, wow.
With a toilet paper tube. You know, you cut a little slot in there. And then she's like, she was so proud and like, dude, try it out. Makes all kinds of things. But I got her on the website for Design Squad. And there's all these cool little games on there. There's one where she's learning how to use an electrical circuit or fix an electrical circuit or something like that. It's really cool. And she can also draw up these little design plans for inventions she's dreaming up and submit them. And it's really cool. She's having a lot of fun with it, and it's totally good for her brain, I can tell. So
you're making a little engineer, aren't you?
Totally. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, speaking of engineer, I put in the show notes and I forgot to bring it up. There's a Kickstarter happening right now.
Sorry.
Are you back, Cleo?
yeah, my all of a sudden I had a YouTube launch out of somewhere.
Oh, that's okay. But there's a Kickstarter happening right now. You have 6 days to back this. It's called 100 Tiny Hands. And what it is, it's toys for your brilliant little inventor. So I backed this because they have a whole bunch of different kits. And it's just like you were saying, Eric, it's encouraging exploration of science and how things work. And these little kits, they haven't met their goal yet. Their goal is 50,000 and they've only reached 35,000. But it's by a Klein Engineering Lab in Irvine, California. So super cute. Watch the video. See these little kids use these kits. And that's kind of what they're endorsed and supported by a whole bunch of organizations. So including Nerd Parents, because I've already backed it. And I would love to get one of these little kits for Mateo when he gets a little bit older.
I'm thinking I'm going to get one for Colette because I saw the video and it looks totally right up her alley.
Totally. I just think it's awesome to encourage your little inventors. Mm-hmm. So I'll put a link in the show notes. In fact, if you're in the chat room and you're interested, I'll put that link in the chat room as well. So you can check that out. So yeah, when you mentioned Colette doing that on PBS.org, I thought about that little project on Kickstarter. So Design Squad, have to keep that in my back pocket for Mateo.
If you want to, PBSKids.org is really pretty great. Mm-hmm. There's a whole lot of fun stuff on there, and it's really I'm really a big fan of it. I let Colette play around on there often.
Does she watch Sid the Science Kid?
Oh yeah,
we watch that every morning.
It's a good one.
Scientists in the house.
Yes, so I think I've seen nearly all of them.
Yeah, though their ties are, I'm like, what Gerald? His voice is just a little too deep for that kid.
Yeah, maybe.
It freaks me out a little bit, but it's a fun.
There's a lot of things about some kids' shows that seem slightly bizarre or off-putting to me. But if the kid's having fun and it seems like they're getting something out of it, hey, more power to him.
He just sounds like he's a 70-year-old smoker at 10 years old.
It's true.
Carrie, are you still with us? Do you want to?
I am still with you.
You have any family game night fun you want
to? Sure. Well, this week because I'm sitting down a lot, we decided that what we were going to do was plan out our garden for this year.
Oh yeah.
And which is a lot of fun because I had Colin tell me, you know, the older girls aren't too into it, but Colin's very excited that it's getting warmer outside and we have a garden plot. So he's very excited about what are we going to grow? How does it grow? What grows underground? What grows on a plant? And the app that I have given him to use is 99 cents on the iTunes store. It's called Bugs in the Garden. So he can be out there, and when we're out there pulling weeds, he can look for little bugs and identify them. It's very easy to look at, very easy to see, and he's just kind of started getting used to it. He's still at the stage where he's interested in the plants, mm-hmm. and he wants to plant seeds. We took tongue depressors, and he can draw on them what's going to grow in the garden, and he can spell out the name of it, and we're going to go out and stick those in the ground. So that's kind of where we are now. We're getting into a lot of those games that involve the garden growing things, because he's just at that age where he can start to, you know, see it and watch it grow and not have to be, you know, train wreck right into it,
right,
and pull
right.
it all apart. So yeah, we're looking forward to doing that this year. But Bugs in the Garden is great.
Bugs in the Garden, awesome. Yeah. All right, so let's jump into our solicited advice. This is the section of the show where you write in and hopefully we give you some advice. I mean, we're in the same boat you are. So we're just kind of floating along in this wonderful journey of parenting. So, you know, maybe we have resources. And that's the other thing. There are times where I just assume everyone knows, like maybe something that I discovered, but I've learned, especially in my teaching career, that, you know, not everyone would know about it. So if you're thinking the question, more than likely, there's probably a handful of other people who are thinking the same question. So go ahead and write us in at nerdparents@gmail.com and we'll try to help out. And we have such a collective group of people coming in. We all have different experiences. And in fact, one of the emails that we got, Carrie, was specifically for you.
Oh, jeez. hate mail so early.
No. It's not hate mail. Not hate mail at all. Okay. I'll read it to you. She says, "Hi, my name is Sarah. I have two boys. Odin and is 4 and Xander is 13 months. The question or advice I'm asking is mostly from Carrie, but everyone's advice is wanted. Odin has autism, not a bad case. Like he has not a lot of sensory issues, but he's barely starting to talk. And I mean, he and his brother are about the same level if Xander doesn't have a bit more. Also, Odin's type of autism is called regressive, so he was developing typically, I'm losing my place here, so he was developing typically, if not faster for the most part, and then about 18 months started to regress. Now, why I tell you all this is for my question for you is, hubby and I have been talking about having another child. Xander seems to be developing typically, and we've noticed the differences between Odin and Xander at the same age. Now Carrie has Eden and now has her son. Was there anything you did to help with your fear of having another child? Did you have a fear? I know it is different. I'm sorry if this is all too personal. Of course, you don't need to respond. I was mostly just wondering. I have always wanted 3 children, and my hubby said he would support whatever I decide. I just have no friends to ask that have other special needs children, and I would like Xander to have a typical sibling, but there's a chance that he will have 2 not typical siblings. Just wondering your thoughts. Sorry, it wasn't more nerdy." Thank you, Sarah. Sarah, you're sweet. I'm not sure if you want to answer, Carrie. So,
oh God, yeah, absolutely, okay. Guys. I'm an open book. You guys can always contact and answer. I'll answer anything, which can be alarming, but yeah, I will answer just about anything. With regard to having another child, when my husband and I were first planning our family, we both wanted like a baseball team full of children, and I was older. I'm 6 years older than my husband, so I was like, well, then we better get on the stick. We need to get this. We better get this ball rolling if we want to have that many kids. So we had Sarah, who's typically developing. Super intelligent toddler, real happy. We decided to have her sister. We had no indication anywhere during my pregnancy with Eden that there were any problems. Mm-hmm. She did not develop any kind of an obvious issue until she had her first seizure at 10 weeks old.
Right.
So, and to this day, there is still no outward diagnosis for why she's the way she is. She has a lot of similar issues to some children, but a lot of things that are different. Eden's disorder, as it's defined now, is categorically regressive. So normally you have children who would develop to a certain age, probably about 12, 18 months, and then they would start to lose skills, and that's when they get diagnosed with the seizure pattern that Eden has. And that's when people would notice it. Well, my child used to be able to sit up, and now she can't even do that anymore. And then they would take him into the doctor and diagnose this brain problem. Mm-hmm. Eden never did that. She never regressed because she was only 10 weeks old when it happened. So she has always been a kid who has just very slowly gone forward. So in some ways, she's neurotypical to the kids that have infantile spasm, which is the name for the collective series mm-hmm. of seizure disorders that she has. And then there are some kids that she's absolutely nothing like. So she's not 100% neurotypical. And I think when you have a child with disabilities, regardless of what the disability is, you just start at ground zero and say, well, this is what I have, and I'll go forward from here and see what I get.
Right.
And when she was about four, my husband said, okay, well, Eden's at the age in the next 2 years where she'll come out of her special needs preschool and go into a state sponsored school for children with severe mental handicaps. And I said, well, great. Well, once she's in school, you know, and we get her into a pattern, which a lot of kids with neurotypical disabilities really enjoy a consistency in their day-to-day life. So he was like, this is great. She'll have school every day. It'll be consistent. It'll get her set into a pattern of behavior, and that'll free up our time if we want to have more children. Mm-hmm. And I thought, that's great. It'll give her some kind of consistency to her day, whatever that is. And yeah, I think we could have more kids. She was eight before we had another child. So right. it doesn't always work out that way.
Right.
Were we afraid? Sure. Yeah. More than any other, because we don't have a diagnosis, so we don't know what we're getting into. We didn't know whether we were going to have another child like Eden. So we did what a lot of parents do, is we went and had some genetic testing done. And they came back to us and said, we still don't know what's wrong with her, but because there's clearly something that happened, and it probably happened in a developmental level when she were pregnant, we have to say that there's like a 3% chance it could happen again, because right. clearly something happened, but we don't know what. So we're going to give you like 3%. And it's just, I think for a lot of parents, it's a matter of saying, if I were to get what I have now all over again, is that fair to everybody here? And would we be okay with it?
Right.
And that's exactly what we said. And my husband said, we were at the age where my husband said, the kids are almost grown enough so that we can leave Eden with a caretaker. Maybe we want to start doing more just on our own and put the idea of more children aside. Or did we want to add to the family, kind of start all over again with the infant thing?
Right.
And I said, I want more babies. And he went, okay, fine. So he was fine. He went along with it. And I really was just kind of like, you know what? It wouldn't matter, because I know how to handle Eden. Right. And if I had another one that ended up the same way, well, then I just got blessed twice. So aww. I didn't think of it after that. I think it's just a matter of perspective when you're in the moment. I understand absolutely wanting to have another typical neurodeveloping child to play with your son. I absolutely understand that. And that was a concern of ours. Was it fair to Sarah if we were to have yet another child with disabilities? Does that take time away from her? Does mm-hmm. it make her feel a little bit more isolated? And I just talked to her about it. And okay. I just, you know, she was older. Granted, Sarah
right.
was nine.
Right.
But I did say to her, you know, you love your brother or your sister. And that's a conversation I would even have with your little one. And it's just, if he sees, I think the beauty of having your kids closer together is that they see one another as playmates mm-hmm. and they don't see disability.
Right.
So I don't know that having another child, even if they were not neurotypical, that it would be any different to them. It would just be, oh, that's just my family and it's the way it is. Sarah knows that Eden, she's 14. She knows that her sister has neurological disabilities, but she was only two when Eden was born. We went to see my niece, who was born the same year Eden was, in the hospital about 6 weeks after Eden was born. And I'm sorry, 6 weeks after Eden was diagnosed. And all Sarah wanted to know is where's the wheelchairs? Because she thought that's what babies came with.
Right.
You know, I mean, so to her, right, yeah. having that's them closer in age, yeah, she doesn't know it's any different.
I've seen examples of this directly as well. When I was working at the school that I mentioned before, in mm-hmm. the summer, I was a caregiver for just individual kids that would, you know, parents would hire out to a third party company that I can't remember. But I worked for that company and I would go take care of those kids like for an hour or two. I was just their caregiver for a little while to give the parents a break, really. And one of my kids was a twin whose twin sister was didn't have special needs, but the twin brother did. And the two of them, just to watch them play, you could tell that before acknowledging that her brother had all these different ways about him, he was still just her brother, her playmate. It was just, you know, because she grew up knowing that's, you know, just this, that was normal to her. And the two of them were, it was actually really cool watching the two of them together.
Well,
it's really neat. Yeah. I think that when you decide, if you decide that you want to have more children, as long as you are surrounded by people who you feel will support you, they don't have to be people with disability, children with disabilities. As long as you're surrounded by good people who support you in having more children and expanding your family, I think you'll be in a good place regardless of what you get.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's what's really important. I live in the Midwest. My entire support system was in the Northeast. Yeah. But I found a way to make friends and find people that I knew I could rely on if I was in difficulty. So we just said, let's go for it. Yeah. I mean, now I've got a little ball of dirt dipped in energy and I just, whoa, he's all over the place. But for the most part, he just looks at, well, that's my Eden. And he doesn't know any different, but he knows that she's different from other kids, but he doesn't think anything of it.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's made him definitely more compassionate, I think, towards other children, that you have to play gentle with everybody, not just with kids in wheelchairs. And he knows that, well, Eden can't sit up and Eden still wears diapers, but he doesn't really kind of overprocess it. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he thinks of it as fair.
I don't think kids really overprocess anything. I mean, they're living in the moment. They're playing, they're having fun. It doesn't, I mean, I'm sure some do, but I would think it's going to be more you deciding if this is right for you and your husband.
And I think you're going to have fears regardless of whether or not you're worried just about having another child, regardless of whether or not you come with disabilities. There's a bunch of built-in fears there anyway.
Sarah, I can tell you that I have the same fear. So far we haven't had any problems with Mateo, but I'm older. So as soon as you hit 35, they treat you like you're going to have like a mutant baby. That just puts so much fear in you. And especially because I had a difficult pregnancy and I had a placenta abruption at the end. I have so many fears. Like if I did, because, women die from placenta abruptions and it's just, do I want to do that and roll those dice? So I totally get the fear that you're feeling. I think we all have. I mean, pregnancy is scary. I mean, just even the ones that go normal, it's scary.
we had Eden and Sarah naturally. Well, not naturally. I had some lovely epidurals, but the normal pathway.
Right,
let's put it that way. And when Eden was born, like I said, there was no indication that she had any issues. She was big. She was the biggest of my three children. She's the smallest now, but she was the biggest then. She was almost 9 pounds. And just a happy, chunky little monkey. No big deal. No indication that there was anything wrong. And then there was some consideration for, well, were there problems maybe we weren't aware of? Mm-hmm. Did she have a little loss of oxygen? So when I was pregnant, those were my big concerns, is that not to recreate the same situation I had with Eden, just in case that was what did it to her.
Like if
so I planned to have a section with Colin because I said I'm not going to vaginally deliver him and put him at risk for what may or may not have happened to Eden. So that was how we addressed it, is that we just, you know, we're going to have a section. So when Colin was born, I do remember being very positive, I'm going to go have a C-section and he's going to be fine and we have no indication that anything's wrong and everything's good. Keep in mind, we had a miscarriage between Eden and Colin at 5 months. So we were kind of already a little nervous going into it. And I was 38 when Colin was born. So again, I had been through the rigmarole that Nicole's saying, the after 35, testing. You are ancient history.
I know.
Oh yeah, all that
all
stuff.
The genetic testing.
All the testing and stuff.
The percentages and goodness.
I just said, I'm just going to go with it. And I remember him being born and all I could think of was, "Ooh, this was great. I'm glad I did this. This was a great idea." But what came out of my mouth was, "Is he okay?"
Yeah.
Because that was what was thinking was, is he like his sister? Is he all right? And I just had my husband, I said, "Go get him." And he brought him to me and he goes, "I know we didn't know with Eden until she was 10 weeks old. I feel like he's good." Yeah. And I said, "Okay." And I said, "Regardless, we'll know in 10 weeks. So at around that 10 week mark, we were kind of hovering a little bit, just kind of waiting to see if he started to twitch or if he did anything weird. That was the hardest part for me. And then after that point, I just said, you know what? Even I don't care if he starts having seizures at 3. I'm just happy he's here.
Yeah.
And it's going to be what it's going to be, and you're going to make it work. So all the blessings to you guys, whatever you guys decide to do. But I think that having it under your belt already, that you're dealing with a child that you think might have some developmental swing going on. Maybe it'll come back. Maybe it won't. Either way, if you guys feel prepared to be a parent for the third time, I think you'll do great. Yeah. And you've always got me. You can always email me and ask me anything you want.
You're like the mother of the internet.
Seriously. I love listening to you talk.
I do too.
God, awesome. Somebody needs to tell my husband and my kids that. Everyone else has to listen to me talk.
Well, Sarah, I hope that gives you, you know, it may not give you an answer, but it might make you feel less alone in that path that you're looking to go down.
Love your kids' names.
Yes,
Odin
right.
And Xander.
Yes.
Those are great.
Yeah.
Those are great names.
Powerful names. I love it.
We also have an email from Heather. She just says, I have to say, I love this podcast. I'm listening to the first episode and laughing out loud, mind you, at work, nodding about the unsolicited advice and the ideas of being a nerd parent trying to raise a 14-month-old. Thank you for this fun podcast. Thank you, Heather, for writing in. I've been meaning to mention too, we are in iTunes and on Stitcher, and you can leave reviews if you would like to let other people know. And in fact, if you leave reviews on iTunes, I know it helps us in the rankings, and we have a few iTunes reviews, and I just wanted to give a little shout out to a few people. Wee Petey says 5 stars, really like this show. If you're a parent, then this show is too much fun to miss. I really appreciate the recommendations as a new parent, experienced podcasters with quality production as well. And then we also have one from Triumphy. Great. Really, really cool and fun. Thanks. So I have
it's
a few
funny.
More.
I was about to leave an iTunes review, and then the next day you emailed me asking if I wanted to be a guest on the show. And I was like, oh, should I not now? Is that like against
the
rules?
Spectacular educational podcast I've ever heard in my life. Oh, look.
I'm on it. All right. So I think that does it for our show. I want to do a few thank yous. In fact, we have a new sponsor of the show. We have chocolateness.us. All of us, Eric, Cleo, and Samantha and myself all got little samples of the chocolates. So I don't know about you, but when I'm in like, you know, waking up at 4 a.m. and like all night stuff, I tend to go to the sweets.
Oh yeah.
And the fact that Steve from Chocolatist US wanted to work with us, I'm like, oh my gosh, this totally makes sense.
And Steve puts booze in some of his sweets.
Yes, he does.
I like Steve a whole lot.
Thank you.
And in fact, if you're listening to this and you want to check out the category, I mean, the chocolate there is just amazing. And they have a salted caramel.
Oh,
they,
my God.
Were those amazing?
You guys. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, they're so good, guys.
So anyway, if you're interested in checking out these wonderful gourmet chocolates, you can head on over to chocolateness.us. And in fact, if you're not even sure how to spell that, just go to Nerd Parents and click on the link. And if you use the code NERD, you get 10% off your order. So he just has an amazing selection. He does seasonal stuff too. So like for St. Patrick's Day, he had a Bailey's injected chocolate. And Eric, you were digging on those, right?
I was
totally
loving those too.
That was so good.
So
that was my favorite, actually, the Bailey's one. Yes.
I'm not big on liquor, so I'm more of a caramel person.
I'm not either, but I really liked it.
Did you? And then he also
Bailey's ones with cup of coffee. Oh, I was happy.
Oh, wow.
It's delicious.
And he sent, the bacon coated chocolate?
There was a bacon one in there. I
did you try it?
I tried it. And,
well, you know,
I think just bacon and chocolate might not be for me. I gave them to my sister who said they were delicious. So I'm sure they were wonderfully made. She really liked them. It's just me.
My daughter stole the bacon ones from me, so I can't even tell you if they were good. I just know that she went into her room for several hours and didn't come back. So that's usually a good sign.
Well, you see all the time, like especially on, you know, websites, oh, it's all about the bacon. So I thought it was kind of funny that there was a bacon
Absolutely.
Chocolate. So, and I've heard those combinations before. Mm-hmm. So head on over to chocolateness.us and look at the amazing category of chocolates and use that code for 10% off. Also, choremonster.com is a great sponsor of the show. You can head on over there too. Alpha Geek Radio, where we're doing this live streaming every week. We move around depending on the parent's schedule, but we try to do episodes every Wednesday at 10 o'clock Mountain Time. And of course, if you want to talk with other nerd parents, you can head on over to forum.myextralife.com. And Scott Johnson has given us a nice little space over there where we talk with one another. So that's always fun. And you can find us at nerdparents.com and email us directly at nerdparents@gmail.com. And of course, all three of us are on Twitter. You can find me at Nicole Spag. You can find Carrie at Coffee Please. And Eric, I'll let you say which one, because you have multiple Twitter handles.
I have too many. Snyder Mahler. It all gets pretty much. Yeah. Snyder Mahler is the best one.
Yeah. And Samantha's at Samantha Jane. And of course, we have a Nerd Parents Twitter account as well. So for me, for Eric, for Carrie, thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll talk with you in a week. Bye.
Bye.
Hello again, Nerd Parents. It's Dan from the Geek All-Stars podcast. And here is another Nerd Parent board game recommendation. This week's game is another Habba game, but this time it's for all ages. The game is called Tier Off Tier, or for us English speakers, it's called Animal Upon Animal Balancing Bridge. Now, Animal Upon Animal comes in a variety of forms, but I really love the Balancing Bridge version of the game the best. The manufacturer says 4 and up. It can be played in as little as 15 minutes, but I think the replay value is pretty much infinite. Now, the game comes with various animals and in a lot of different good chunky blocky size. They have giraffes, iguanas, panthers, flamingos, bats, and one crocodile which sits on the bridge, which is where everything gets started, to be stacked on. They're all good wood-sized pieces and a good size, and you don't have to worry about any of them getting swallowed by the children at all. So each turn, you'll be rolling a die and taking a piece from the indicated spot in the box that the die says. You will then take that piece, and you must stack it upon the bridge, and a new piece has to be touching an existing piece in some way. You have cards in your hand, which you have a combination of three of those animals. Some of them, sometimes three of one or three completely different ones. Any of those times that the three animals are touching each other in the stack in the middle, your card can be flipped over. Even if it's somebody else's turn, you can complete one of your cards. Once you've flipped over all your cards, you win. Sound easy, right? Well, if you knock over any of the pieces, you have to draw another card. It's easier said than done, and when you get some high stacks going, the fun and craziness just go hand in hand. We play this game all the time at my family game nights. Kids just love the stack, and a lot of times they can stack a lot better than I even can. But when I go to board game convention, it's a regular late night mainstay for all the pure fun of it and laughing that goes along with it. Check it out. Even the youngest kids will love it. Like I said, the pieces are big, easy to stack, and not too likely to be eaten by anybody. Next week, I will cover a more complex game, but one the whole family can enjoy and play cooperative that really gets your imagination running. Have a great week.
About this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.